the good liars.
The good liars?
This is boring.
Boring.
I will die standing in my boots.
Herschel, I got you some condoms.
What made everyone so weird and sad that they had to come out here?
Oh, Mr. President, welcome to the show.
We are the good liars, and we are going to tell the truth. Trust us. Welcome to the Good Liars Tell the Truth. I am Jason Selvig.
And I'm DeVrom Stiefler, and we are the Good Liars.
And we may be the Good Liars, but on this show, we are going to tell the truth. And we are in Chicago for the Democratic National Convention. We're going to be here all week. We're going to have episodes every single day of the Good Liars Tell the Truth. Our plan was you were going to come in on Sunday night. I was going to come in on Monday morning. And both of us had terrible travel trying to get here.
I wouldn't exaggerate.
No, okay. Let's not exaggerate. What happened with you? Explain
okay,
what happened.
Okay, so it wasn't that bad. So I got to LaGuardia around 3:45 p.m.
Yeah.
For a 5:30 flight.
Sure.
So in plenty of time.
Yeah.
Boarded the flight an hour late. It happens.
That happens.
That can happen. The rain started to come down once we were on the plane.
Mm.
The captain said, don't worry, we're just going to be a little more delayed. Sit tight. Where the crew is all, none of them need to be let off. The weather's going to pass, and we're going to take off. I assure you of that. Well, 2.5 more hours go by. They took us back to the gate, and then they said, don't worry, just stay near the gate. We're still planning on leaving. They didn't.
That's a lie.
An hour later, they said the flight is canceled. By that time, it was about midnight. Well, I was in charge of checking our bag of stuff.
Yeah.
So they...
This is longer than I thought it was going to be, by the way. You're really going into
really
great
not
detail
that, not
here.
That bad. Okay. I told you, it's really not that bad. So
The experience.
The experience. And
okay.
then the story
right.
might be
disagree.
Worse than the experience.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
by
this experience for me right now,
you're
is
hoping
bad.
At the, you get there at the airport at 3:30, and by midnight you find out your flight's canceled. You're hoping you can leave quickly. They said no, we'll give you your checked bag back, but it's going to be an hour or two.
Yeah.
So I waited and finally got my checked bag back at about 1:30 in the morning, and then I drove to Baltimore to get on a morning flight because they were rebooking people so much later. So zero sleep. So not so bad.
Zero sleep. Okay, well, mine, and I'll tell it fast. I'm going
to
be really fast
with
the story.
Time.
I'm not going to take
Everyone
my time
loves
with this.
It.
No, it seems a little like self-indulgent a little bit to talk that much, you know?
Well, who, if about that, if
the
you
travel
did,
experience,
yeah, it would come
it
across
would,
that
would come
way.
Across, yes, yes. So I did not sleep, and this is my own fault for not sleeping the night before my flight, but I had to get up at 4:30 anyway for my 7 a.m. flight. And the flight takes off a little bit late, no big deal. Then in the middle of the flight, I see that we're turning.
Wow, you're really indulging in this story. Okay.
Jesus Christ, here we go. In the middle of the flight, I see that the plane is turning. Like, you can see that, like, the shadows change and all this. And I look at the flight map. And we're turning around, like not going west anymore. We start going east and start heading towards Detroit. And then the captain comes on the PA or whatever. The captain comes on and is like, hey, we're making an emergency landing. We're smelling fumes in the cockpit right now. We're landing in Detroit. And everyone seemed fine, but then there's a couple moments where you're like, oh, is this, what is the emergency?
Are they trying to put us at ease, but really things are going very
things are
wrong.
Going really bad, yeah. So then I was in Detroit for a few hours, but any excuse to go to Detroit, especially the airport.
Well, did you see Eminem? Did you see 8
I
Mile?
I saw Eminem, I
did
saw you... 8 Mile, I watched the whole movie while I was in Detroit.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
no, so it was great.
Ended
up getting here, we both ended up getting here on zero sleep, literally. And we went to the DNC. We're here. We're
wow,
here.
The
we
Democratic did. National Convention.
Yes.
I
and
know all the acronyms.
Acronyms, yes. So we're here at the DNC. And the big news for us is we've got credentials. We can actually go into the building.
Right.
We can film in the building. We can interview in the building. And we have kind of the best seats you could possibly have for
the DNC.
I think
so, objectively.
Objectively, the best seats,
yeah.
Which are the the last row, literally
the last row of the whole arena. Our backs are up against the concrete wall in the top row. So it's perfect. You really get a sense of the space. I'll tell you that much.
You get a sense of the space. You can't really get a sense of anything. Yeah, you can't see the people. So we watched the speeches yesterday. I guess I should mention, before we even went in there, we saw the Westboro Baptist Church, that group of just the best people in the world, the nicest people in the world.
Right. So when you think about your typical church group, whatever, doing a bake sale or, you know, selling secondhand books or whatever church groups do.
Yeah.
These people are a little different. Because they'll have signs that say the worst stuff you could ever imagine.
A little bit more bigotry, I would say.
So much more.
Yeah.
And they'll stand on a street corner and they'll say horrible stuff, and they'll have signs that say horrible stuff. And then if people try and talk to them, they'll just say more horrible stuff. You get the sense that they might not be the coolest people.
No, I would actually go out on a limb and say they're terrible people. Terrible people. I don't want to judge. That's one of the sins. And
the sign says if you sin,
you go and you burn in hell for eternity. That's their whole thing. It's not a lot. It's not really teaching love. You know, like some people are like, the Bible teaches this. God, Jesus preached love. We should love thy neighbor. They're more like pointing the finger and telling people they're going to hell.
They're all about judgment. They think God judges people, and they're like casting that judgment upon people in hopes of them renouncing all of their sins and joining them,
it's like they're doing it so they can feel a little bit better about themselves.
But does it
point the finger at other people?
But what actually is the reason? Do you think why does it exist? Do these people pay the church? Like everything's about money. Like why does it exist?
I don't know. I mean, I think the leader of it is a little bit of a
piece of shit or
a piece
something.
Of shit. Yeah. And the other big thing, maybe my biggest gripe with them, is we saw that they were going to be there, and we went there, and we kind of planned accordingly. They said they were going to be there till 5.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, it is a sin to lie.
Right.
They left at 4:45.
Right.
So we only got to interview for 10
full
minutes
early. Yeah. Then when we said something, hey, you're leaving early, they said, well, you should have shown up earlier. Well, maybe you should do the time
maybe
you're scheduled.
Maybe you shouldn't have lied.
Yeah, maybe
Westboro
you shouldn't
Baptist
have lied.
Church, you
so
sinners.
If you're out there listening, and we know we have a wide variety of audience members.
Yeah.
If there are any Westboro Baptist Church members listening, stop with the lying.
I was going to say if there's any Westboro Baptist Church preachers or whatever listening, you're going to burn in hell.
You're
going to burn in hell for that sin, you sinner. Right. So that was outside the convention. But inside, there was a lot. Inside, there were a lot of Democrats, I would say.
This is the
Super
Bowl
Democrats.
Of Democrat politics. I think there was one full-on Republican. Charlie Kirk was one.
Charlie Kirk was there. And Fox News had their own suite there.
But for the most part, it's like this really wildly happy group of Democrats who feel like they have something to hold on to and be excited about leading up to the election. Did not necessarily feel like that a month ago. They love Joe Biden. They love Hillary Clinton. They love the people that are a little bit from the past, but they are really excited to have a future. Almost too excited given the election that we're headed into.
You were talking about this yesterday. We were talking about how excited Democrats are now, and is it too much excitement? Or I think it's kind of a good thing. It's like people are optimistic and all this, but also everyone has made the point to say we're underdogs. We don't look at the polls now. We
I know
are
you can say
election.
It, but how are you acting?
But why does that matter? If
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it feeling this degree of happiness when.
It's you. I think
months.
You're projecting this on yourself. You're worried.
Maybe,
you're worried, and you're like, why aren't you guys acting more worried?
Feeling
like out of like some sort of like superstition or something.
It could be that.
Okay.
I mean, celebrating something or feeling like you're celebrating something 2 months before it happens, in some ways, I know people aren't actively saying, we are definitely going to win, although they did say that in the speeches a lot.
Well, yes. Yeah,
which you kind of have to say, but knowing that that could all evaporate in such a very near future, it feels, maybe it is a little superstitious to me or something that I feel that it's important to like stay grounded to the election, the fight that's kind of upcoming and then very near future. But regardless, you got to let people have their happiness, have their victories.
Fun. Let people have their fun. So in no particular order, I want to talk about some of the speakers we saw. And again, we saw this from the very last row of the convention. Hillary Clinton came out, had a big, it was the first time I think that when we were there that this, it felt like it was like, I don't want to say like a rock concert or something like that, or like a basketball game, but like the building was like shaking. With
it was
people
like reverberating applause, and it was rolling. So every time she would be about to speak, it would continue. And to me, that might have been one of the best moments of the night, just because it was like this room full of people who were with her in 2016 when it did not work out. Do not hold any ill feelings. We're not like it was like a celebratory, but like kind of like really classy moment. It felt like embracing someone who they know has been tireless in fighting for their party.
There was a very funny moment of the speech, unintentionally funny, where she was speaking and she was talking about the women's right to vote, and then she said it was in whatever year that Tennessee. And then, like, the whole Tennessee delegation was like, woo, cheering. And then she finished her thought, was like, that Tennessee was the last state to allow women to vote.
But just to set the scene completely, that didn't stop them. Then they had a second round of excited cheering.
Well, I think everyone cheered after that, like, oh, this is when we can cheer. I don't think Tennessee was like, we did the right thing by cheering in that moment.
I think they just liked being called out specifically. I don't think they quite realized that they were a little too celebratory.
And it was in Virginia,
the very last.
It was in Virginia, in Charlottesville, everyone cheers like where Trump was talking about the very fine people. Yeah, right. But so she gave a speech. It reminded me of like being back in 2016, being like, you know, she's pretty good.
I thought she was really good.
I
thought she was great.
It was just like thinking about what it would have been like, how the timeline would be different now had she won. I had a couple of those moments where it was like being 8 years ago where we were like,
and she won by millions of votes, the popular vote. So it was like razor thin. She had a moment that kind of brought the house down when they said that, you know, they really have Donald Trump on the run. Which that was a moment where I was like, "Ooh, we're too excited."
It's like, should you be the one saying this about? Because everyone was like, the polls and everything were saying she was going to win. And
So.
And then who else?
AOC spoke. Right. She kept the energy up, and I think the whole first night, I think generally people were really good. There was the auto workers union head, called Trump a scab. He took off his shirt. A Trump is a scab shirt on.
It's funny because we were talking about how, well, I wonder if there's like making a joke, like there's no Hulk Hogan stuff going on here. And then he straight up does a Hulk Hogan thing.
Took off his shirt. Yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah. Did not take off his shirt to reveal his bare chest.
Hogan didn't either. He had a
You're
Trump
right.
dance
he had
thing.
A Trump shirt. You're right.
Yeah.
So there was a Hulk Hogan moment, but it was from the head of the auto workers.
Interesting
union.
Thing about Hulk Hogan and this guy. Hulk they Hogan.
Are.
No, this is actually a true fact. Hulk Hogan, best according friends. To Jesse Ventura and Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, the wrestlers in the 1980s, they were making all this money. You know, WWF was making all this money. Wrestlers wanted to form a union so they wouldn't have to work over 300 days a year, three shows a
that
day
is
sometime.
So
which is
much.
Hulk Hogan was the top moneymaker there. He like snitched on the people who were trying to form a union, got them fired. He snitched to the boss. So he is a union boss.
Wow. So if you're really following things closely, that could have been a knock on Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Kind of one-upping Hulk Hogan in a Hulk Hogan kind of way for the people who were paying close attention you.
But I don't think
but
it was.
But you don't think it was.
I don't
It wouldn't have made any sense, really. Nobody would have gotten it.
No. Nobody would have gotten it at all.
Who else was there? We had Andy Beshear. We had Chris Coons.
A little bit. I have to say, his entrance was very goofy.
Chris Koontz?
Yeah,
he kind of had a goofiness about him the whole time a little bit, which I kind of liked, but I could see people kind of poking fun at his demeanor up there a little bit. I kind of thought it was likable, but it was like there was like a little goofiness.
I'm not saying it was good or bad. It was just funny. It's just like you could, because it went from, I think Hillary Clinton was right before him, Hillary Clinton, because it was near the end of the night because he was introducing Jill, and the energy, you know, was not as
not
high
quite where it was. It's also the end of his speech. Not to pick things apart a little bit, but he was trying to get a
rolling applause.
Let's go, Joe, or something. Oh, is that what he was trying to do? So he was kind of half saying it into the microphone.
We love Joe,
but he was kind of like, I think, trying to goad the crowd into chanting it.
Yeah,
but he didn't commit to it hard enough.
Yeah,
so it was kind of we love Joe.
We love Joe.
We love Joe.
And if you guys want to chant it, he actually
we love Joe.
Like it. And if you, we should all chant it. Do you want to chant it with me? We love Joe.
Anyway, again, a little bit like not saying good or bad, but maybe not.
It sounds
good.
Like you're implying maybe not bad. Good. Let's just be honest here.
But I was gonna say I kind of had fun with his the goofiness that he brought to it. And during that speech, people were handing out Jill signs.
Yes.
I know we both noticed that.
Yeah.
There's a definite like big effort to like set things up for the next speaker,
the choreographing of things like between one and the other.
So as Koontz is speaking, Jill signs are being handed out, green with white type Jill signs, and then of course he brought Jill Biden up.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was watching like the videos, like she had her video, you know, and a lot of the videos, it's so funny because like you could watch them and like they're well edited. But you're like, this is, it's just, it's very funny to like play it, tug at people's heartstrings.
Which video? What are you talking about?
I was, well, specifically the introductory video for her, like before she came out,
right,
about like all the good work she's doing. Just the music and all this. It's like a very like current type of like tug at your heartstrings.
Tug at your heartstrings propaganda to get the crowd all
and it's interesting watching it live.
Yeah.
Because like when you watch it on TV, you like maybe you feel something, maybe you don't. It's very easy to be like, oh, this is this. You're not
You forget that it's being played live.
Yes.
As even because you're just seeing it as like a pre-taped packaged thing. But yeah, it's they had other videos too. They had videos about there was
the Law and Order. Can we talk about the Law and Order one?
Yeah,
that was the one where I was like, it was just like, tonally, I'm gonna give a note to the DNC here.
Sure.
I thought the tone, it started off like in the criminal justice system. There are it started off like it was Law and Order.
Okay, so we are speaking now to the Westboro Baptist Church people who are listening and the DNC people who are listening, but you have a note for the DNC, okay?
Yes. Well, with a note for the Westboro Baptist Church,
you're going to hell. Yeah.
You're burning hell for eternity. Not as harsh for the DNC. the DNC, it was like, so it started off like almost like a parody, and then it got into some really heavy stuff that he's done, because he's done a lot of like actually terrible stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought the tone of it was like, you can't do a Law and Order like parody and then get into actual serious stuff.
Jill Biden, and I thought she was good just in that, you know, seeming super genuine, and everyone's there to kind of watch this Biden passing the torch moment.
I felt like something with the body language, and again, like I'm saying, seeing it live, like it meant any difference. I was watching the video on the screen, but like just her body language, I was like, I could tell that like this isn't the most. She wished Joe was up there, I think.
You think so?
I think so.
I mean, of course. They both till the bitter end were like, he's up for the job and he's going to do this. And I think it takes a lot of like mental, emotional commitment to stick through that and to know when it's over. But for years to be putting up with those questions, and you know, Biden has been an underdog his whole career, and she knows that, and he's accomplished so much. So, yeah, I can imagine that. And I thought she would be bringing Joe up. Not the case.
No, she brought up her daughter.
Daughter is the word you're searching
yes.
for.
Yes, yeah. yes. And
so that's when, like, humans will make children, right?
And do you want me to wait to say daughter? Do you want me to wait a little bit before I say hey you? I can say it right now. I hate you.
Okay.
I hate you.
Sure, sure.
I just need to get that off. But you keep going.
That's fine.
I just had to get that off my chest.
If you have any notes for me, you seem to have notes for everyone. So she came up, Ashley Biden.
Do you want my note?
Sure.
I hate you.
Okay, sure. Yeah. A lot of hatred here in this hotel room here at the DNC.
You're going to burn in hell.
Ashley Biden came up and told a great story about how, was it Christmas or something, that she had gone, her mom, Jill, had packed her up, she and her brothers, into the car and driven to the train station, and Joe had basically taken the train to Delaware to hug them and then jump back on the opposite track to head back to D.C. to work. Moment of a father's love and also commitment to government.
Yes.
So perfect. Yes. The perfect story.
And can we talk about Joe Biden for 1 second and what it was like? And this was actually a moment where I was really happy to be in the nosebleeds. I actually was happy for our terrible seats that we chose. We chose the last row. Let's be honest. We chose.
We could have been 10 rows.
We could have been 10 rows and had a totally different vantage point if we were 10 rows in front of us. When Joe Biden came out, it was pretty cool to see the whole arena of people chanting for him. People saying, screaming, "We love Joe." Of course, they had new signs that were given out to him. But seeing the moment, I felt things in it. And the things I felt were just that I like Joe Biden. I've said this before. I like Joe Biden. I think he wants to do the right thing. Like, that's part of what guides him, is wanting to do the right thing. Which is not a given.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you see that he's older, obviously. I mean, we've talked about the debate. We've talked about, you know, the poll numbers and all that stuff. He's still showing the age, but he's showing, you made the point afterwards, like, he's still there. Like, yes, he's older, but like,
you get
the
sense he's 100% there. He's losing a step in that, like, you need to react quickly. You need to find the words to this right now.
Yeah.
But of course, given any time to process something, like, he's still there. This means everything to him. And you're kind of confronted with the reality of 5+ decades of serving and leading to this moment of, I mean, can you imagine Donald Trump passing the torch to somebody that's not, like, in his family?
Yeah, or like, what son or daughter would he even do it for, you know?
It's just an incredible moment that he's doing this. He's doing it seemingly for, you know, the party and for the country and all these things. It's like kind of a last act of public service is to give up the reins when it's time. So it was hard not to get a little emotionally invested in it.
Yeah, and then I think the ovation lasted for a couple minutes.
Too long. It was late.
Too long. It was late. That was it. We want to do another note. It's like we gotta get out of here early. Like, we're Eastern. We're on the Eastern time zone.
Right.
We're here in Central.
That's a
time
note
zone.
For the DNC. Or is that just what you're saying? They should have tightened everything up a little bit.
Just fall back a little bit. If you want somebody to speak at 8 p.m. then, and they're a star, you still got to have your keynote, I think, end by 11 p.m. Eastern.
Right. So, so Biden wrapped at like 12:22 or something.
Something like that.
A.M. And, you know, I saw some conservative paper headlines that were like, in a final indignity, they pushed Biden past prime time. It didn't feel that. It was the build.
No, it was like a build to it.
Build
for sure.
to this night. But they should have kept it a little bit tighter.
I don't think they're like putting anyone last that isn't. They're not going to be like,
and then we're going to slowly de-escalate after midnight.
Let people just trickle out. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That wasn't it at all. And the energy definitely felt like it rose. I thought it was overall in agreement. It was like kind of an emotional moment for everyone in the room. Again, like something that. Unity felt like a big theme of the evening, in that like nobody there was like sour grapes about this.
No,
this is a fully people are embracing what's happening, and we kind of watched it in that moment. He is up there. He is being his self that people love, but he is in this act, you know, passing the torch. I saw some headline that he didn't so much pass the torch as light it ablaze. I think that was his right a little bit to give like a fiery, fun, impassioned speech and not have it be all about everyone else. He was able to kind of like seize the moment for himself.
What was fun about it? You said fun.
When I say fun, I guess I mean that feeling, the tugging at the heartstrings feeling. I wouldn't say fun.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's fair. And the other thing is we saw was at the beginning of everything, Kamala Harris came out, surprise appearance.
That's right.
And addressed the crowd, and she got...
dressed in all gold.
Another wrestling term. She got a big pop.
Yeah.
She got a big pop from the crowd.
Do you call soda or pop growing up?
Growing up, I think everything was a Coke, even Pepsi.
That's
even
insane.
Though we were a Pepsi house.
That's
we were
insane.
A Pepsi
better than cold pizza? That's insane.
Better than
hot pizza.
Yeah, better than hot pizza.
That's insane.
All right, well, that was day one of the DNC. Like I said, we're going to be doing these podcasts all week long, so you're going to get the inside track, or at least the track from where the birds are flying around at the top of the arena.
Yeah. The outside track. We are in the machine. We're not part of the machine, but we're inside the machine.
Yes. So you can join us all week on the podcast here. We want to remind you, you can support us on herohero.co/thegoodliars. $5 a month, you get exclusive content, and you'll be supporting us, helping us to go to terrible places. And you know what? This has been kind of fun here at the DNC, so I'm not going to say this.
And
it's a nice hotel we're at. All right, do you have any words of wisdom before we get out of here?
If you are at our hotel, I'm not going to talk shit about this hotel, but if you're in a hotel in Chicago and they have a chorizo breakfast plate, don't get it. Too salty.
Okay.
Not the regular kind of salty that chorizo is. This was way too salty.
Think about
a spinach-based thing with a fruit salad.
I'm going to wrap it up here. That
something
does it.
A little less salty.
For the good liars, tell the truth. We'll see you next time.